Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help you focus on the news of the week through the lens of original thoughts. And I'm just going to get right to it here because I have more stuff than ever, maybe. Anyway, so according to San Diego County Supervisor Jim Desmond, who's probably a conspiracy theorist and a nut job who wears a Jiffy Pop hat, he says, according to the health records that he's been able to review, 194 of the approximately 200 COVID-19 deaths in San Diego County, 194 of them resulted from underlying conditions that made patients more vulnerable to the virus. 194 out of approximately 200. But he's obviously got a Jiffy Pop hat on. He's crazy. There's no way it could be that. By the way, Gavin Newsom out in California recently extended the state's shelter-in-place order until at least sometime in June. Just sometime in June. Sometime in June. we can all choose to believe what we want to believe, right? But eventually history will look back on all this, and there won't be the smoke and the dust particles and the confusion and the lies from China, the deceit, the tyranny. It'll all have cleared, and everything will be in plain view. And I'm here to tell you right now that if you do not begin to participate in peaceful civil disobedience now, history will judge you poorly. The time for peaceful civil disobedience is upon us. And it's something I've done before. I don't know if you've ever done it. I've done it, but it was far too late. I started protesting at abortion clinics approximately 30 years after the legalized murder of innocent people had begun. So I was late to the party, but unfortunately I wasn't born until a few years after they started murdering innocent people legally in America. So I've done it before. I will do it again. And the time is now. And I'm not sure which one I should start with, I'll tell you. Maybe. Anyway, let's start in the widespread satire file, where the Babylon Bee reports that Americans are readily adopting new social distancing measures that will guarantee that no one ever gets sick again. That's right, state legislatures have issued orders that all citizens are to indefinitely don a plastic hamster ball whenever they travel outside their home. The human-sized hamster balls are made to be impervious to all foreign particulate matter, including viruses, bacteria, and oxygen. When asked about it, Carol from Seattle said, "Well, I guess if it keeps everybody safe, we have to accept the new normal." Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer says, quote, "This is just the way things have to be, and anyone who disagrees just wants grandma to die." There will be a grace period until everyone is able to purchase their giant human-sized hamster ball. Governor Cuomo in New York said, quote, "You can walk into a store with a mask, but you have to roll out in a safety sphere. You don't want to be carried out in a coffin, do you?" said Governor Cuomo. All right, that's the Babylon Bee from the widespread satire file. I'm not going to do COVID news. There's other things going on in the world, folks. Lots of other things. I'll get to the COVID panic hysteria in a moment, in a few moments. In the meantime, the New York Post, a story from the New York Post lands in our justice file this week. Tyquan Howard, a 16-year-old young man, was shot and killed at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on May 13th in Brooklyn. The New York Post reports it is unclear what caused the shooting, but I'm guessing it was probably another human being with a gun. That's just a guess. Police had previously arrested Tyquan Howard and charged him with robbery and assault for being part of a group of teenagers caught on video allegedly attacking a Brooklyn girl. That's a funny way to put it. He was caught on video allegedly attacking a Brooklyn girl. So we have video of him attacking a girl in Brooklyn, but he was alleged. Okay. That was back on March 5th. The video of a group of teenagers kicking and punching and beating a girl laying in the fetal position on the sidewalk in order to steal her. One of the kids in the group, after the group punched her and kicked her in the head and torso, one of the attackers pulled a pair of black and white Air Jordan 1 sneakers off her feet and ran away with them. Tyquan Howard was a part of that group, and he was shot and killed on May 13th for reasons remain unclear, but probably because he's a... he runs with a bad crowd. He's a horrible person. Participated in the beating and robbery of a young girl, and has received the justice that he would have never received had he gone to trial. But we move from there, from the justice file, into the widespread cowardice file, which there is no lack of cowardice in the world today. Sergeant Brian Miller, you'll remember, was one of four deputies who lost his job after the 2018 mass murder at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School down in Florida. We all remember it. Remember the police who got there and hid? Remember, you saw them hiding behind their cars? This was one of them, Sergeant Brian Miller. He was fired for that. He was fired for neglect of duty. He was the first supervisor on the scene, but he put on his bulletproof vest and hid behind his car as children were being massacred in the school. The sheriff's office fired him last June, but an arbiter has ruled that his due process rights were violated. He has been rehired. He's been given back pay of $125,000, and he's back on the police force. He's back on the police force. Because there are no consequences for anyone in the government who does anything that gets people killed. Or very little consequences. I don't want to use hyperbole. Not allowed to do that. Don't want to use any hyperbole. Meanwhile, from the domestic tranquility file, there's a magazine online called Commune. Have you read Commune magazine? He asked. Is extremely attractive. Audio engineers. Not familiar. It's an Antifa publication. Antifa. 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 I don't know. Just go with Antifa. So they have their online magazine, Commune. Well, it announced earlier this week. This special Saturday edition of the Weekly Worldview, by the way. So that would be earlier this week. Sadly, Commune magazine has announced that it has discontinued operations. Why, you may ask? Well, there are allegations circulating within the editorial team there at Commune that an editor raped another person working on the magazine. The alleged rapist is Shyam Khanna, a 31-year-old anarchist organizer, which is kind of ironic. He's an organizer of anarchists, which that's got to be difficult. Anyway, Jessica Raven says that Khanna had been abusing her, and then he raped her. So she confronted him. She demanded an apology and asked him to read four feminist essays, which he did. He agreed, he read the essays, and then he raped her again. And now she's had just about enough of that. I mean, anarchy can only go so far. Commune magazine, by the way, will be out of print, or whatever you call it. I don't know what you call it since there's no print anymore, but... But don't worry, folks. There's a Commune Editions Yeah, there's a poetry project called Commune Editions that will continue under the directorship of UC Davis Professor Joshua Clover and Berkeley Professor Jasper Burns. That's Commune Editions. The poetry project will continue. Okay, that's Antifa. From the war file, we go to Kabul, Afghanistan. Three gunmen disguised as police burst into a hospital's maternity ward in Kabul and started shooting everyone in sight. They killed... they massacred 24 people, 16 mothers, two newborns included. Reuters reports that the attack has shaken even the war-torn nation numbed by years of violence. This all took place at Ataturk Children's Hospital in Kabul. That same day, at least 32 people were slaughtered in a suicide bombing on a funeral in Nangarhar, a province outside. This is all amidst U.S.-brokered peace talks between the Taliban and the Afghan government. We have a quote from Afghan National Security Advisor Hamdullah Mohib. He said, quote, "There seems to be little point in continuing to engage the Taliban in peace talks." Really? It's a very insightful fellow. Yeah. Very insightful to realize that. We go from there, from war, over to the Dim New World file. Now, vandals have cut down the iconic Iron Cross surmounting the summit of Peak Saint-Loup in southern France. It was a 30-foot-high iron cross erected in 1911, and it replaced a previous cross that was made of wood, and it was a cross that could be seen from miles around. Well, vandals cut it down this past week, and also covered its base in graffiti. It's not the first time that this cross has been vandalized. It was also vandalized in 1989. Police are investigating, of course. French churches and Christian monuments are apparently under attack in France, according to Breitbart. France records an average of 3 churches per day targeted for vandalism over the past 3 years. 3 churches a day in France vandalized. What makes people freak out so bad when they see a cross? You know, when I see a vampire movie, it doesn't make me freak out. I don't believe in vampires or aliens or any of that stuff. But, you know, when I drive through a town in southern New Mexico and they have pictures of alien bubbleheads and statues, and I don't feel the urge to tear them down. Because it just, you know, if you really don't believe my God is the true living God, wouldn't you just think he's silly and I'm just delusional and deranged? Why would you worry about it? Why would it offend you so badly? I think there's as good a chance that this cross was cut down by atheist teenage potheads in France as Muslims. Although I don't know what the graffiti was. They didn't say what the graffiti was. If they would have said, was the graffiti in Arabic, or was it, anarchist type stuff? That would be a major clue. All right, back to the war file from the Religion of Peace. I'm going to tell you about Nicholas Damask, PhD. He's a teacher of political science at Scottsdale Community College in Arizona. He's been teaching there for almost 25 years. He's the only tenured political science faculty currently teaching in Arizona to have written a doctoral dissertation on terrorism. And he has taught world politics for each of his nearly 25 years of professorship. Well, he and his family this week are in hiding. because of a quiz he gave to his students. He gave a quiz. There were three questions on the quiz that offended the university so badly. Well, first of all, it offended Muslims in the community so that they are threatening to kill the doctor, the professor. He's had death threats made against him from Muslims. Basically, Muslims are threatening to kill him because he suggested that Islam is violent in an oddly ironic twist. So now they're threatening to kill him. His three quiz questions that offended, they offended the Muslims enough to threaten to kill him, but the university, the college officials, are demanding that he apologize. While he's in hiding under threat of death, the college wants him to apologize, which is another oddly ironic. The quiz questions. Number one, who do terrorists strive to emulate? Answer, Mohammed. Question two, where is terrorism encouraged in Islamic doctrine and law? Answer, the Medina verses, i.e. the portion of the Quran traditionally understood as having been revealed later in Muhammad's prophetic career. Question number three, terrorism is blank in Islam. Justified within the context of jihad is the answer. What is justified within the context of jihad? Yeah, that's the answer. And so that those three quiz questions have brought death threats now to Professor Damask, and the college is demanding that he apologize. That is, if he's not killed first, he'll have to apologize. If he's killed, the college says that they will not require an apology from him. But until then, we're waiting, Mr. Damask. Damask claims that the three questions reflect basic facts that are readily established by reference to Islamic texts, teachings, and numerous statements of terrorists themselves. But don't state the facts. Don't give me facts, Professor. This is a time of widespread hysteria and panic. But you can't run away from the trouble. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's good to have you and all of that. Good luck to the professor down there in Arizona. We hope he is neither killed nor renders an apology to the college down there. All right. Meanwhile, we go into the alternate universe file where, well, you may recall, because we've reported on this extensively, back in 2019, two Connecticut high school transgender sprinters claimed the two top spots on the girls' indoor track championship for the second year in a row. That's right. Two trannies, 2 years running, have beat all the girls. The boys beat the girls in track. Three biological girls, formerly known simply as girls, who competed in the 2019 events, have filed a discrimination complaint against the trannies. And while that litigation works its way through the courts, District Judge Robert Chatigny has ruled that attorneys for the biological girls, formerly known simply as girls, lawyers for the girls cannot refer to the tranny sprinters as males and must instead refer to them as transgendered females formerly known simply as trannies. But it all gets quite confusing after a while. And now we go to reason number 1,224. Reason number 1,224 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. A teacher at Bellevue, Washington's Newport High School has been charged with rape and molestation of a student. 28-year-old instructor was arrested at his home this past Thursday. The victim was an 11-year-old boy. The accused has been allegedly abusing the boy since he was 5 years old. This is a teacher in the government schools. The Bellevue School District released a statement on Friday because absolutely no one wanted to face a camera or a microphone live in light of... the Bellevue School District released the following, quote, "It is with a heavy heart and the highest level of concern that we have been informed that a Newport High School teacher has been arrested for exploitation of a minor. We have little information regarding the allegations, and the investigation and the legal process are outside of the district's control. The charges at this point are only allegations. Our commitment to student safety is unwavering. We are fully cooperating, and we are doing all we can to support anyone who may have been impacted." Reason number 1,124 to get your children out of the government schools: they could be raped by their technical education teacher, but whatever that is. 28-year-old single guy teaching in school is just a bad idea. Just a bad idea. I mean, if he had kids of his own, he could teach his own kids, but that guy's probably not going to have kids of his own anytime soon. meanwhile, from the widespread hypocrisy file, we go to Pennsylvania, where Pennsylvania's health secretary, Is that a woman sitting typing dictation while wearing a mask? Is that a health secretary? I don't know. Anyway, the health secretary there in Pennsylvania calls himself Rachel Levine. And Rachel Levine moved his mother out of a personal care home, out of an old folks home, after ordering all other nursing homes to accept coronavirus patients from hospitals. I just sneezed. That's the first time I've sneezed out loud since the lockdown, I think. Have you folks, how many of you have suppressed either a cough or sneeze in public for fear of scaring people? I've done it on several occasions because I'm asthmatic, so I have a tendency to cough. And we all have a tendency to sneeze once in a while because there are particulates floating around the air. And if I don't have my N95 mask on, they get in, you know, get up there in the upper nasal cavity there and cause a sneeze. Anyway, I've suppressed my sneezes so that I don't scare you people out there. I know you're terrified. Try to calm down. Levine ordered all of the nursing homes in Pennsylvania to accept coronavirus patients as she moved her mother out. I'm sorry, his mother. See, this is all very confusing. Levine had previously cited his mother's situation at a long-term care facility while talking about state regulations. So this health secretary, whatever that is, actually talked about his mom and how we needed to protect the elderly, and then ordered COVID patients into the nursing homes, just like Fredo Cuomo's older brother. I forget his name. Jeff Cuomo, up there in New York, the mayor of New York, governor of New York, for crying out loud. Anyway, here's what the health secretary, who calls himself Rachel, said. "We need to make sure that our loved ones in nursing homes stay safe. That's why I'm not able to visit my mother either. I don't know what to... Anyway. By the way, in fact, let me get to this. the reason I'm so confused, ladies and gentlemen. So the health secretary in Pennsylvania moves his mother out of the nursing home while ordering COVID-19 positive patients into nursing homes, which is insane. Probably the worst public health decision anyone has made in this entire pandemic, besides destroying the world. That was a big one. But aside from destroying the world, ordering sick people into nursing homes, it was probably the worst public health decision made in this whole episode. And this was made by Pennsylvania's health department secretary, who calls himself Rachel, but he's a tranny. He calls himself Rachel, and he was on the radio being interviewed, and the host of the radio show called him sir. Why? Because he's a man. That's why. But because he dresses as a woman and insists that he's a girl, Levine responded to the host by saying, "Please don't misgender me. Don't misgender me." And so the host apologized profusely multiple times and self-corrected. Now, that's the first time I've seen that term, self-corrected. I hadn't heard of it. What other kind of correction would there be? I guess someone else could have corrected him, maybe by maybe hitting him in the face with a 2x4 for misgendering a hideous tranny. I don't know. He self-corrected. He apologized. Then he went on Twitter and apologized. Said, "My actions were not intentional. I was confused because I knew he was a guy, and it's confusing. Please forgive me. I'm so sorry. I misgendered." Oh, the greatest sin. So here's a tranny bureaucrat actually killing old people with her imbecilic decisions. And this radio host has to prostrate himself for days in front of the entire state of Pennsylvania because he misgendered a tranny. Anyway, I saw an interview with this particular tranny, and let me just tell you, honey, you ain't pulling it off, all right? I'm sorry. You all right. Now, from the widespread slander file, two governors. This is from the Free Beacon. Two governors have reopened their states, the governor of Georgia and the governor of Colorado. Only one of them has been accused of experimenting with human sacrifice. Let's see, the governor of Colorado is a homo and a Democrat. The governor of Georgia is a somewhat conservative Republican, an incidentally conservative Republican. Which one do you think has been accused of experimenting with human sacrifice over at the Atlantic magazine? Do you think it was Governor Brian Kemp, Republican of Georgia, or homo Jared Polis out in Colorado? That's right. You get the prize. It was the Republican. The Atlantic said he was basically exercising experiment in human sacrifice. A brief aside, the Atlantic article, after accusing Governor Kemp of experimenting with human sacrifice, toward the end of the article, the Atlantic notes that other states, including Colorado, have already put similar plans in motion. But they did not identify Jared Polis as an accomplice in Governor Kemp's experiment with human sacrifice. So they left him out of there. So this is exactly as I predicted. It's exactly as you would have thought it would have gone. It's exactly how it's going. And I'm telling you, this has to stop.
Wreck is gone.
Lagoon. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us, folks. Folks, what I want to say, by the way, is what do you think the odds are that James Woods, the famous actor, listens to the Weekly Worldview? What do you think the odds are?
Very high.
They've got to be pretty high. Anyway, on Thursday...
He's got very high IQ.
He's a very intelligent person with good taste, so there's a good chance. Anyway, on Thursday, he posts up on Twitter a screenshot of Stevie Ray Vaughan and Albert King playing guitar together, which I just talked about. Now, what are the odds? Well, chances are that he just likes Stevie Ray Vaughan. I mean, what are the odds he likes Stevie Ray Vaughan? And that's really the explanation behind it all. But anyway, I screenshotted it, so I saved it. If I ever get Jimmy's number, I'll find out. All right. Now, folks, there are an awful lot of people with an awful lot invested in this pandemic being awful as possible. And while it certainly has been awful to a degree, especially for older folks, especially for older sick folks, and especially for older folks in nursing homes, it's been, well, epically awful and tragic. But it's time that we all just admit that this has not lived up to the awfulness under which our leaders chose to flinch in the face of the enemy and lock us down. They flinched, is what I said. Our political leaders, our entertainment leaders, every leader of any sort flinched in the face of a potential crisis. Instead of girding our collective loins and going to war with the enemy, they flinched and decided to hide. You know, people like to talk about this as a war. And I think it could be a war. It could be. But we would have to start treating it like a war. We talk about a war, but we don't behave like it's a war. At least not like any other war we fought. In this war, the troops are being forced to hide. The troops are being forced to hide instead of being led on the field of battle. They said, you know, lockdown. They called it a lockdown. I did some research. I'm going to get into that, folks. This idea of lockdown, this idea of social distancing, where does all this come from? I'm going to get into that. But they told us we had to lock down, shelter in place, stay at home, whatever they called it. When any rational thinking, especially a leader, would understand that really only a quarantine would actually work. And a quarantine could stop a bug like this. It could. But a quarantine means you don't leave the house at all. And someone has to bring you food and water. That's what a quarantine is. This lockdown, or whatever you want to call it, shelter in place, stay at home, safer at home. This is something different. I'm not even sure what to call it, besides an obviously bad decision made in a panic because you were afraid. That's what it is. It's a bad decision made in a panic when you were afraid. You know, I never make good decisions when I'm in a panic. I know I've been in a panic before. And you know, you can't make good public policy decisions when you're in a panic. I mean, look, folks, we watched the communists lock down Wuhan. Does anyone remember? It was late January. We watched them lock it down. Did that stop the virus? Did it work? Well, we watched it not work. In real time, and 2 months later, when it obviously had not worked, the rest of the world copied that. I mean, it's truly irrational and incomprehensible. You know, I'm convinced that historians will view these decisions that were made as some of the worst and most inexplicable of all time. I mean, all of human history. What they did to us was not a quarantine. It was the panicked, unjustified closure of almost every church, venue, every park, every trail, every beach, every picnic table, every small business in America. You know, you can quarantine a few people, maybe a few hundred if you have the facilities. That's possible. But not a few hundred million, and not 3 billion. So, I mean, having watched Wuhan, and with a true quarantine, to any rational person should have realized that a quarantine was simply an impossibility. So, you know what? I'm not going to go to the past. I'm just going to say for future reference. For future reference. A reasonable leader, okay? A rational, thoughtful, courageous leader in the future, because we don't have any right now, but this is for future, should logically deduce that this mitigation advice of closing almost 100% of everything, almost everywhere, for an indefinite period, or whatever it was it 2 weeks, was it a month, was it 2 months, whatever time frame the patently insane flinchers were advising us at the time, that advice could never be worth the cost. I mean, we could talk about like closing the border. That's rational. You got a pandemic. You might close the border. Yeah. Close the schools. Absolutely. Yes. Close the schools. But close the country? Are you out of your mind? It's insanity. No. So like a rational leader, with knowing that a real and effective national quarantine is simply impossible. I mean, a wise and courageous leader would have carried on, not unlike the officers who dispatched the troops in the Higgins boats at Normandy. He would advise the people how to protect themselves, right? Which is well established, right? From the book of Leviticus all the way up to Louis Pasteur and beyond. A wise and courageous leader would prepare the infrastructure for a bloodbath. We're going to make ventilators. We're going to build hospitals. We're going to get the equipment we need to deal with this battle. That's what a wise and courageous leader should do in the future. Prepare the infrastructure for a bloodbath. And then you go on TV, you go on the radio, and you prepare the people for a grim and deadly battle that we're about to have to fight, in which some of us are going to die, folks. Yes, this is going to be awful. You prepare the people for the battle. And then you go to war. Go to war. You don't hide. You don't lock everyone in their house. You go to war. And ladies and gentlemen, wars are won by men who are unafraid to die. And some of them die. Sometimes many of them die. And in some battles, all of them die. We call those men brave. We call them heroes. Do you remember? The object in war must be victory. The object cannot be to avoid all casualties. So what is victory in this war against a virus, against a pandemic? What is victory? Victory means repelling the enemy until he cannot invade further. It means repelling the enemy while protecting the vulnerable from death. And folks, if we do not have the stomach for a fight, we can respond to the enemy by hiding and waiting for a vaccine. While hundreds of millions of people starve to death in the third world because the first world has chosen to hide. That's what's going to happen. Tens of millions, possibly hundreds of millions of people in the third world are going to starve to death because we got scared and hid. So we can hide or we can achieve victory by facing the enemy squarely without fear of death. Is that too radical for you, for anyone to relate to face the enemy without being scared to die? That's the only thing that's helped us survive, is men who faced the enemy and weren't afraid to die. We have to face the enemy without the fear of death. We have to abandon these idiotic, counterproductive lockdowns, mitigation efforts, social distancing. And we need to march. We need to go out and march and risk our lives. We need to risk our health. Yes. March out there and risk our lives and try to fix this catastrophic mistake and its results, the catastrophic results. And in rather short order, those of us who go out will catch this bug. Yes. Some of us will get sick. It looks like about 15 to 20% of us will actually get sick. And some of us will die. Somewhere between 0.1% and 1% of us will die from this. The much better odds than the first wave at Normandy. But eventually, and in short order, enough of us will catch the bug. We'll develop the tribal immunity that will ultimately defeat the ability of the enemy to invade any further. That's what the object of this war must be. Now, doing this in the beginning, when all this started, that would have been courageous. That would have taken some real guts by our political leaders. Doing it now is just common sense. It's just a return to sanity from a fit of madness. Folks, had Donald Trump done what I just said at the very beginning of this, while the whole rest of the world cowered in fear, if Donald Trump had stood up and led, Donald Trump's legacy would have been lifted into the realm of George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Franklin Roosevelt. But now it can only help to diminish the scope of the failure. But now is the time, because we could still survive this. You know, the people who are invested in awful right now, the awful forever crowd, I'm not sure what to call them. They're never going to admit the idea of locking down the world was an enormous, tragic, catastrophic mistake. Never. They'll never say they're sorry. In fact, they have an almost religious commitment to crafting a narrative that will absolve them of any responsibility for the gross negligence of choosing to try to lock down 3 billion people because of fear in the face of a potential crisis. They're even going to assert that they were right and that it worked. That's right. That's the history they're going to try to write. That's the narrative they're going to craft. And they very well may have their way for a generation or so. They might get away with it for a while, but history is a cruel judge, cruel, stripping away the vanity of carefully crafted narratives of the moment and revealing events in the harshest light of truth as it is in relation to other events and other generations and other men and other decisions and other wars. It's time to go to war. And unlike our grandfathers, we don't have to march into a hail of enemy machine gun fire to win the war. We just have to go to work. But first, I think it's time for peaceful civil disobedience. The time is now. The time is now. I'm looking for my opportunity. I'm not sure what it will be. You need to look for your opportunity for peaceful civil disobedience. Because if you do not, history will judge you poorly. Welcome back. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host. Well, you know who I am. You've been listening for almost an hour. So if I have to tell you, you... All right. So I've been working on a research project because a good friend of mine, a man who I love and respect, he said that this was inevitable, that this has been coming at us for a long time, the idea of a lockdown in the face of a pandemic. And so, because I had said that, just a few short weeks ago, we would have all thought, this is insane, this whole idea. And he said, no, it's been coming at us for a while. Epidemiologists have been, anyway, and I thought, well, I missed it. I didn't see that coming. Not at all. So I've been researching. In fact, I spent the better part of the last 48 hours just on Google searching news by date, by specific dates from January 2000 to November of 2019. I've been searching things like mass quarantine, lockdown, quarantine, social distancing. And I'll tell you what I've found. While epidemiologists have discussed mass quarantine for decades, yes, they have, the preponderance of the published literature mitigates against mass quarantine as a viable or effective strategy. Those conversations have been happening for decades as well. In fact, I pulled a paper down from the NIH.gov, and that paper says, quote, mass quarantine for disease control was essentially abandoned last century, meaning in the 20th century. And there was another paper that said, we expect there is no one-size-fits-all strategy for controlling emergent diseases, and our results agree. And I'll post these links up on the blog. So after I searched the news by year on the topic of lockdown, quarantine, mass quarantine, I searched from January 2000 to November 2019. And that takes a while, folks. Anyway, I did not find a single news report that would have indicated that any such policies were gaining currency. And in fact, there were just a few dozen articles that dealt with any of these ideas at all. These ideas of a mass quarantine or a mass lockdown, just a handful, a few dozen. And I'm talking about almost 20 years of they're just, and all the articles were negative, by the way, and most of them dealt with the quarantines or lockdowns that happened in Sierra Leone back during the Ebola epidemic there. A lot of the articles, the very few articles that were there, the majority of them questioned the efficacy of trying to lock people down. Did it work? Did it not work? It seems the preponderance of opinions was that it did not work. In fact, even Bill Gates, in a rather prescient lecture from 2018, when he warns of a global pandemic, it makes no mention or any discussion of implementation of tactics like lockdown or none of this. If there was a guy in a position to know, a guy who thinks about this kind of stuff a lot, that would be Bill Gates. He didn't mention it in his talk. Anyway, it's for you know what? For the same time period, January 2000 through November 2019, I searched the term social distancing. Now, this is kind of creepy, folks. I found five references in the news. Three of the references were in obscure journals that would only be read by epidemiologists and other geek types, right? But one of those articles, I gotta tell you, one of those articles contained quotes from 2007. It was a publication in one of these obscure journals from 2007. It had quotes in there from Anthony Fauci and Neil Ferguson. ironically enough, and they were all for it, by the way. The idea of social distancing, which, by the way, they equated with shutting down businesses, shutting down air travel, shutting down public transportation, shutting down restaurants. See, I thought social distancing was the 6-foot rule. That's what I had thought social distancing was. But in the minds of Anthony Fauci and Neil Ferguson, social distancing was a much bigger thing. It's what we got now. Anyway, there was no reference to a 6-foot distance, by the way, in anything I could find ever. There was one reference to sitting 1 meter apart. In an article from some health online health magazine from South Africa, talked about if someone else is sick and they're sneezing and coughing, you should try to sit 1 meter away from them. So anyway, I'm convinced that 6-foot rule, that was made up on the spot by some bureaucrat, probably Anthony Fauci himself, probably. And he just decided to double the 1 meter reference that he had, you know, somewhere bouncing around in his foggy little memory banks there. He just said, well, let's double that. Yeah. All right. Anyway, so the three reference, because I had never heard the term social distancing ever in my life. Never heard of it. Now, you search social distancing, there's 43 million references on Google. A term that was cited five times in the past 20 years now has been cited 43 million times. So those were social distancing. I'm losing my train of thought. Anyway, there were a couple of other news articles, one from CNN 2011. Yeah, CNN said there's a social distancing trend that's coming. 2011, because there was a swine flu outbreak in Mexico, and they tried this on, not on this scale, but they tried shutting down parts of the city. And so CNN reported there's a social distancing trend that's coming. It had a picture of two people wearing surgical masks kissing. Anyway, apparently that trend never materialized. I'm not a very trendy guy, but I missed that trend. And then the other was that South African article. Try to tell you how to avoid the flu. If someone's coughing and sneezing, sit a meter away. Anyway, if these ideas, like locking down a country, like closing all the businesses, if these ideas were gaining currency in the public health world, I'm convinced we would simply see more having had been written about it back in the media over the past 20 years. There'd be more in the record, and especially in the public health related papers and reports that are in the public record. Anybody can do this search, and it's simply not there. There's no record of anybody talking about this except Anthony Fauci. And Neil Ferguson. Anthony Fauci, by the way, is the spectacled little goon who stands beside Donald Trump every day, or I guess I don't know if they do it anymore. And Neil Ferguson is the one who created the 2 million people are going to die in America model. Those are the two guys. They were in that paper saying this is an idea we should consider. So anyway, There would have just been more of this available, and I would have been aware that these ideas were out there. That's my gut. So for now, I'm convinced that the idea, that this whole idea of mass quarantine and social distancing, the idea that this has been advocated among epidemiologists for decades, and that this event has been coming at us for a while, that simply does not hold up. I'm sorry. I believe that it is, in fact, as I thought, that all of this would have been considered just a few short weeks ago as patently insane by everyone on earth outside of a couple of academics who by chance were given an opportunity to implement them by idiots and cowards. These two who I saw quoted in this paper end up in a position where they can actually do it, and they did it. These two men will go down in history as the two men primarily responsible for the most epic and catastrophic failure of courage in the face of a potential crisis ever. That is their legacy for all of time. All right. I'm not sure where to go. We go to the criminally insane file, where CBS in Denver reports that Cornelius Haney stands accused of murdering Heather Perry in Denver. Heather Perry's body was discovered in an alleyway in East Denver on May 9th. Haney was released early from his prison sentence due to special needs parole criteria related to COVID, following guidance issued by the Centers for Disease Control. Hey, folks, did you know that the original name of the CDC was not the Centers for Disease Control? Because that's irrational. A thing only has one center. It doesn't have centers. It was originally called the Center for Disease Control. That was the original name. Center for Disease Control, the CDC. But as it got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and more people's dim-witted nephews were hired, and mistresses and other family members and donors, it had to be expanded into the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, mind you, just to... The ever-expanding bureaucratic state filled with experts like Anthony Fauci and Neil Ferguson. I think we've certainly learned a lesson in the perils of governance by bureaucratic experts. This is a lesson in that, if nothing else. But I'm also convinced that this is the end of America. America as you knew it is gone. We never recover from this in any sense that you could have ever imagined in the past. You simply don't recover from something like this. From the Dim New World file, researchers at University of Illinois and Harvard, along with University of Chicago, have done a study that indicates 2% of the nation's small businesses are now gone. They surveyed 5,800 enterprises between May 9th and 11th, and they found that, their findings are consistent with another poll that happened back in March by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, that 1 in 4 small businesses were preparing for permanent closure within 8 weeks, absent of reopening or some sort of new federal relief. Well, I'm here to tell you, folks, there is no federal relief for halting a $20 trillion economy in mid-air. You can't fix that. The government's not big enough. They can't print enough money. They can't steal enough money to fix that. It's not fixable. It's broken permanently. Now, the people who lose their jobs and their businesses, are they going to go on and do something else? Yes, they will. It's not like we're all going to die from this. But there is going to be no more free market. It's done. They killed it. It's gone. You can't get it back. It's reduced to a shell of its former self, whatever they allow us to keep from this. Very sad to see the self-inflicted suicide of an entire civilization unfolding before our eyes in real time and for real. This is for real. We all have to go through this now. But meantime, up in Wisconsin, from the widespread tyranny file, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has struck down the Better at Home order. Better at home. Safer at home. Is this the Soviet Union? I'll never use those terms. It's disgusting. It puts a bad taste in my mouth. Anyway, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has struck down the governor's order that people have to stay home, which it's about time. By the court, Governor Palm's Emergency Order 28 is declared unlawful, invalid, and unenforceable. Thank you. Finally, some sanity. Well, folks, and this is why I'm saying it: the time for peaceful civil disobedience is upon us. We need to march in the streets. We need to resist. We need to refuse their orders. Because if we don't, they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop. This is what they want forever. This is what they want to do during the next flu season, this fall. They want to do this. If they even let us out this summer. And there's no guarantee they let us out this summer in some parts of the country. So anyway, I was, as I was debating with my good friend, who I love and respect greatly, about all of this and the fact that I thought it was crazy even before they locked down. And he somehow thought that any one of us would have locked down. And I thought, wait a minute, none of us would have locked down. That's crazy. Anyway, I'm trying to remember what were the things early on in this that made me suspect that perhaps the media was hyping this up beyond all proportion. And I found an article here from Conservative Review. The headline is, "We now know that the majority who contract COVID-19 are asymptomatic." And they talk about a number of clinical studies that we now have. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 clinical studies, okay? Showing the effective death rate from this virus is dramatically exaggerated if you just take into account confirmed cases versus deaths. They talk about the Diamond Princess cruise ship. 72% of those infected aboard the ship were asymptomatic. And that got me thinking about the Diamond Princess. And there was another cruise ship. There was 2 of them that I recall. Now, I will confess, folks, from Christmas time all the way through mid-March, I didn't do any shows. I was off the air because I was moving. And I had other things going. I wasn't really paying all that much attention to world events because I had world events happening in my life. But I did remember the cruise ships. There was a cruise ship that was quarantined off Japan. There was a cruise ship that was quarantined up in San Francisco. I remember. And I remember thinking, if the numbers that the media is hyping, possibly a 6-10% death rate, which is what they were hyping back in February, if that was true, there should be a bunch of dead people on these cruise ships, and there just weren't. And I didn't know the numbers at the time. I just remember thinking, why isn't everyone on the cruise ship dying? Why isn't 6-10% of the people who tested positive, they're in the hospital, how come they're not dead? They should have been dead within a couple weeks. But they didn't die. And I just remember, that was one of a number of factors. Also, combine that with my just general suspicion and skepticism of people who have lied to me for my entire adult life. I have some skepticism about that. Forgive me. I'll put my tinfoil hat on. Anyway, but they go through, folks. It's so obvious now that this bug is way more ubiquitous than we thought, and the death rate is going to fall down to somewhere between 0.1% or lower. That's where it's going to end up. That's just my gut. I could be wrong. I could be off by a couple of 0.001s. Yeah, okay. But is that worth breaking the entire world? Was it ever even reasonable to think we could do that? I assert that it was not. And history will judge that it was not. I can assure you of that. Anyway, so just to, I didn't know what it was about the cruise ships that just struck me as odd, but now I know. Now we can look back. 3,700 passengers on these 2 ships, 9 died. That's 1.3%. And I knew that, who's on a cruise ship? It's fat, lazy, old, sick people. Primarily, that's who's on a cruise ship. Anyway, March 8th, the CDC, the geniuses at the CDC, advised older people with underlying health issues not to go on cruises. They told them that on March 8th. All right, bunch of geniuses. Anyway, the Grand Princess was the one that was quarantined off San Francisco. 1,100 people on board that. And nobody died until much later. It was April before anyone from that ship who got sick died. So by the time we locked down, folks, it was just obvious to anyone who was paying attention, and I was barely paying attention. It was obvious that this was not the end of the world. All right. I'm dwelling on that too much. We go now to the widespread stupidity file, where additional measures at your airport could mean you have to arrive at the airport 4 hours prior to your departure. What kind of additional measures are the geniuses, the bureaucratic experts, what are they crafting for us? Disinfectant tunnels. Yes, that's a tunnel that sprays sanitizer all over you and your bags. before you get on a plane. Bingo boarding. Bingo, I said. Bingo boarding. That's calling individual passengers by seat number rather than by section so that nobody has to get in line. Yep, the TSA has already implemented insane, stupid, counterproductive airport rules like social distancing, keep people 6 feet apart. Okay, why? Well, you can't tell me why. There's no reason behind any of this. Well, I shouldn't say that. There is some reason behind it. Well, the quarantines work. I think I've already gone over this. I don't think I have to repeat myself. Quarantines work, but you have to lock them in the house and they can't leave at all. So that was never rational. And this 6 feet apart rule has no grounding in anything even approaching fact or science. Nothing. Made up out of thin air. Pulled out of thin air, made up out of whole cloth. And then they're going to disinfect everything. This is insane. They're going to disinfect frequently touched surfaces. Really? Are you going to disinfect it between every touch? Because if you're not, then it's really stupid. It's an insane waste of resources for a disease that 99.99% of people will survive. We now know that I was just talking about these asymptomatic. I mean, it's completely within in the realm of possibility that 85% of the people who contract this bug never even know they have it. And 99.9% or more will survive. Is that worth breaking the world over? TSA will also provide fresh gloves to travelers upon request, and they're going to allow us to carry 12 ounces of hand sanitizer in our carry-on bag.
That's funny.
So they're admitting now that the whole ban on liquids was stupid, but we're not supposed to say anything. It's like the weatherman. Don't talk to me about what I said yesterday. By the way, they're also going to let people fly with expired licenses until October because the DMVs are all closed. Wow. Because our government is filled with cowards. It defies.
Time for terrorists to strike.
Yeah. So if you're a terrorist and your license expired, we'll put you on the plane. All right. Anyway. Elon Musk, you folks know I'm no fan of Elon Musk. I think he's a snake oil salesman. But he pushed back. He pushed back and he told California, if you don't let me open my factory, I'm moving. Within a couple of days, they allowed him to open his factory. So folks, if we push back on these people, they're going to stop. And it's not going to require violence or any kind of revolution or anything like that. We just have to stop. We just have to tell them they have to stop or we're not going to vote for them. That's all they care about is winning the next election. So he sent out a tweet on Thursday, and they allowed him to reopen on Monday. All right, so there you go. Folks, if you don't push back on this, if there's not some record that you stood up and said, no more, this is too far, if there's no public record of that, history will judge you poorly. I think I've already said that. Now I'm repeating myself. It's probably time to end the show. The Democrats have introduced a $3 trillion COVID stimulus. Another $3 trillion, and the Republicans come out and say, well, that's insane. We're only going to give you $2.8 trillion. And they'll wheel and deal with the Democrat. They'll give the Democrats, oh, by the way, the new COVID stimulus mentions the word cannabis 68 times. Cannabis, I said. Yep, it mandates the federal government conduct a study on barriers faced by minority-owned and women-owned cannabis businesses. That's just one of the 68 references to the word cannabis in the bill to fight the virus or whatever. They don't even say it's to fight the virus anymore. That's from the widespread criminality file. I think I lost my train of thought there, but it's from the widespread panic file. And this is something that's almost worth panicking about because this is coming for real. This is not avoidable anymore, folks. We have a report from Time Magazine. They say, before coronavirus swept across the globe, it was estimated that 135 million people in 55 countries faced acute hunger. I'm not sure what acute hunger is, but I think that means they could starve to death or will starve to death. These are people living in countries that either have war or other economic crises. Time says climate change, of course, because Time magazine is what it is. But folks, the third world is a rough place, and lots of people starve to death every year. Anyway, they say now that that number could easily double to well over 260 million people facing acute hunger. So now, folks, it's likely that the bureaucrats who tally these numbers over at the UNFood organization, what do they call it? The WFP, the World Food Project. Okay, yeah. It's highly likely that the bureaucrats who tally this up and make these reports, they tend to exaggerate, right? Just like bureaucrats do, you know, they tend to exaggerate across the board in order to increase our perception of their utility. But also, you know, they want to feed their generally bloated budgets, their bloated egos, their bloated desire for power. So we know bureaucrats tend to exaggerate, make themselves look more important than they are. But I would guess that their overall assertion in this article that the global lockdown will double the cases of acute hunger, which, again, I think that means starvation for a lot of these people. I think the idea that twice as many people will starve this year as last year is not only within the realm of possibility, this is unavoidable now. This is coming at us for sure. This is coming at us. And then there's the locusts. I mean, don't forget about the locusts. That story didn't go away. In fact, that locust story got worse because the first world, instead of helping the third world with their locust infestation, the first world flinched and is hiding under their bed right now. And the third world is going to starve. The sheriff in Fresno County says he will not enforce the stay-at-home orders. In fact, the sheriff of Fresno County, Margaret Mims, she says she can't enforce Governor Newsom's stay-at-home orders because she's too busy rearresting the criminals set free under the state's new zero bail policy. Fresno, by the way, just to get to some more numbers here, folks, Fresno is the fifth largest city in America. It's where all the fruit and vegetables from the Central Valley go out and feed the world, or used to. As of last Wednesday, Fresno County had recorded about 1,000 coronavirus cases with 13 deaths. So let's just take those numbers. If those were real, and those are not real, that's highly misleading. In fact, the fact that the news media is still allowed to report confirmed cases versus deaths means that someone is actually deciding to mislead us. That's a conscious decision to mislead. But even those numbers, folks, add the 1,013 died. Okay. I mean, just do the math in your head, folks. Is this worth breaking the whole world over? Is this worth everyone wearing a mask and gloves? And all right, I'm just... We have an article from the Science Really file, where a neurosurgeon, Russell Blaylock, he's a doctor, wrote an editorial pointing out the obvious that everyone in medicine should have stood up and said this. I don't know why they didn't. I think it was just politically incorrect to stand up and point people to facts while they were in the midst of their panic. You had to let them panic and live in their own World War II movie. You're not allowed to point people to the facts. Anyway, he says there's no scientific evidence that masks are effective against COVID-19. So we all know that. Masks are not effective in the preventing the transmission of a virus unless you're sick and coughing and you're going to hurl spit on people. We all knew that before we lost our minds. Anyway, he cites 17 different studies. None of the studies established a conclusive relationship between masks or respirators for protection against influenza. Now, he had to use influenza because there are no studies of anything related to COVID. This was all just what we thought might possibly happen, and we freaked out. We didn't even know, and we freaked out. I guess that's why we freaked out, because we didn't know. Well, I'm telling you, folks, courage is when you don't know if you're going to die. You know you might die, but you do it anyways. It's not bravado. It's just brave. And it's why we exist as a people. All right. Now we go into the just widespread idiots file, where ABC's Jonathan Carl, which why I would listen to him, I have no idea. Why am I even doing this story? He says America's Jonathan Carl says America's testing infrastructure will not be acceptable until everyone is tested every day they go to work. Jonathan Carl asked the president, Donald Trump, who's an idiot. Donald Trump, by the way, was the one bamboozled by Anthony Fauci and Neil Ferguson. Okay, Donald Trump, as much as you love him, and I wish him the best, okay? But he flinched. Now, he was not Winston Churchill. He was not George Washington. He was not Franklin Roosevelt. He flinched. Anyway, here Jonathan Carl says, Mr. President, your senior staff, and you just referenced as is able to get you and your staff are able to get tested every day. When will it be that Americans across the country will be able to get tested every day as they go back to work? What is Trump's answer? That's insane that everybody could be tested every day. No, that's not what Donald Trump said. Donald Trump didn't say, get this guy out of my office. Get him out of here. Put him in a straitjacket. No, Donald Trump said very soon, really very soon, we'll test everybody every day. Trump went on to say how wonderful and great and huge and fantastic testing is. Our testing is bigger and better than anybody's testing. You think Japan can test? You think Korea can test? You watch us test. We'll test. We'll out-test everyone. We'll have the best, the biggest, the brightest, the shiniest tests of anybody. So Carl asks, should people be able to go back to work? I'm sorry. Should people be told to go back to work until they have the assurance that they and their coworkers are able to get tests, which we're still not there, Mr. President? Donald Trump says, well, we're leaving that up to the governors. All right. He's going to leave that up to the governors, who've already proven themselves criminally insane. Someone needs to take control of these governors and stop them from destroying the world. They're destroying the world. And they're killing tens of millions, for sure, so far. Quite possibly hundreds of millions of people are going to die because of what they're doing right now. Which is why we need to stand up and don't be afraid of a virus. Don't be afraid that you might get sick. Don't be afraid that you might die. March forward. Be brave. Come on, folks. This is America. We're not supposed to hide under the bed. If America hides under the bed, it's the end of the world. It's 1,000 years of darkness. That's what it means, folks, if America hides. And that's what we're doing. And I even got a quote here from Willie Brown. Now, you know I'm not a fact of Willie Brown. If it wasn't for Willie Brown, Kamala Harris and London Breed and Gavin Newsom wouldn't even exist. We wouldn't even know who they were. They'd be low-level, they'd be work clerks at the bank at best. Willie Brown built the machine in California that governs California. Willie Brown wrote an article, an op-ed this past week saying this cannot go on. The authorities who have locked us in have yet to figure out how to get us out. If they don't figure out soon, the public is going to find a way to get out on its own. Yeah. The San Francisco Chronicle. They say just when you think the world can't get any stranger, Willie Brown starts making sense. Hey, say what you want about Willie Brown. He's not insane. No one ever accused Willie Brown of being stupid. Criminal? Yes. Evil? Yes. Wicked? Yes. Dangerous? Yes. Stupid? Nah, I don't think so. But, well, there you go. I mean, what more can I say about it? By the way, okay, one last thing here, folks. We're almost out of time. We're way out of time. I'm going long. I don't know why. Gavin Newsom recently said that the first case of COVID-19 came from a nail salon. Well, nail salon owners are upset, and I believe they've gotten a lawyer now, and they're going to file a lawsuit for defamation. Well, a reporter actually asked Gavin Newsom, why are nail salons not being allowed to open in phase two? And he said, well, this all started in the first community spread, he said, was in a nail salon. Well, nail salon owners ask, well, where'd that come from? Nobody ever said that. Tell us, show us, prove it. So now that Gavin Newsom's being pressed on proving what he just said, slandering an entire industry, by the way, an industry that saved hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese women out of poverty and death in Vietnam. They came here and started doing nails. It's a pretty noble thing, actually. Anyway, they're pressing him. They want to know. Well, guess what? He's citing medical privacy laws. He says they prevent him from offering the proof. But many of us suspect that the reason Gavin Newsom said this is because he's a racist. That's why he said it. Because the first reported case of community spread in California was a Vietnamese woman. And so because Gavin Newsom is a racist, he assumed that she works in a nail salon. And now we even know that that case that they thought was the first case, that was not the first case. That case was from late February. There's now proof that there was people who died of this in early February. A different patient, case number one. But if she was Vietnamese, I guess Gavin Newsom would assume that she worked in a nail salon, too, because Gavin Newsom's an idiot and a racist and wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for Nancy Pelosi and Willie Brown and the whole machine. Anyway, that's it. I'm out of time, folks. I want to thank you for being here on the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.